Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Lembitopic. You're listening to Lembitopic on today's news talk radio, TNT.
Good morning, planet Earth. Lembitopic here for many hours, actually, as we look at the stories making the headlines around the world, and we'll be looking back at the week as well as forward to the future. In this show, we dig deep into the stories with some thoughtful and circumspect guests. It's not all over in a few minutes. We have a proper amount of time to hear their views, and I do the best to mine the gold in their heads. My mission is not to get them to say what I want them to think. My mission is to get the facts as best we can establish them and then express opinions, including my own. But we don't mix up the facts and the opinions. That's for you to do, for you to generate your own opinion. Your only duty as a viewer of today's News Talk TNT is to think for yourself. If you can do that on a Saturday evening, if you're in Australia, or a Saturday morning, if you're in the UK, then you have come to the right place. More than that, if you want to express your opinion or correct a fact, if you think I'm wrong, then go to tntradio.live. You'll find there's a lively chat there. And oftentimes there are different debates that go on in the chat that I don't have time to get to. I do make this promise. As much as I have time, I will raise your comments and I shall report even those which may be critical or contrarian in regard to the general mood music between myself and my guests. Free speech is nothing unless we allow all views to be expressed. Also, if you've got the time and the inclination, you'll find our phone numbers there too. Do feel free to call into TNT. That's today's news talk. You'll just go to the website and there are different numbers depending where you are in the world. All of that, I promise, is designed to edify you, to give you the very best opportunity to share your opinions. In the second hour, I'm going to have a general gripe about the complete hollowing out of the old mainstream media. But just suffice to say, I was watching some of the old MSM, as we call it, this morning. There isn't any news. There's something about Lego structures. Now, I love Lego, but I don't think it's central to the issues facing the world at the moment. Buy Lego. Get it for your kids. Carry on playing with Lego with your kids. Lego in Latin, of course, means I learn. Fantastic. But it's not a news story when the world's going up in flames, is it? Perhaps most frustrating, there was this excited presenter on one of the old state-sponsored channels going on about a record-breaking window cleaner. Good for you, mate, but I'm not really sure it's going to change my life. How does that help us resolve the issues of the day? It's a question of priorities. I'll have a proper moan about that at the beginning of the second and the third hours. But for now, I want to tell you the one thing that's been missing all week has been reportage of one of the most important films coming out in the last 10 or 20 years. It's called Climate, the movie. And actually, it drives a coach and horses through the claim that human beings are responsible for destroying our climate. I'm going to talk to Duncan White, who is very experienced in this subject, in just a few minutes. So important, I'll be covering this on my show again tomorrow as well. But what I'm saying here is, if you love Lego, fantastic. If you want to get your windows cleaned, rock on. But perhaps we should have given some of those column inches on air to the fact that there is no credible defense for the claim that human beings are wrecking our climate. It incenses me that the public aren't allowed to hear this basic scientific information. Science is never settled. But in as much as it ever can be, we can be quite sure that we are not destroying the climate of the planet that we live on. As I say, I'll be talking to Duncan about that aspect of the climate fraud, and I will use that phrase advisedly, in just a few minutes. But I'd like to hear your views too. This isn't, by the way, about weather. We'll talk about the differentiation between climate and weather in a moment too. But if I step back from the whole thing, if I look down at the endless diet of carbohydrate news that we're getting, I'm beginning to feel that they've run out of ideas. They know that the climate debate isn't that interesting to you anymore because the climate's not cooperating. And perhaps they think that by giving you an opiate of sport and Lego and window cleaning, and actually there was another one as well, which is a closed motorway in Britain, which is causing great alarm to everyone who happens to be living near that closed motorway, but not many other people. You'll not spot all the other things which are going on. Yes, I think there are elements of collusion going on in the United Kingdom, in the press and in the media. Well, we try to expose those here to today's News Talk TNT, only so that you can make your own judgment. I promise you, I don't expect consensus. I don't demand conformity. And I don't imagine for a moment that you, dear viewer, could be bamboozled by the silver tongue of a TNT presenter or anybody else. So welcome to the home of free speech. Welcome to a place where we will discuss ideas, we will disagree, but we will always give you the credit of having an opinion of your own. That is what my deep thinking Saturday and Sunday shows are all about. I'm delighted that you're with me. I'm Len Bitopek. This is the Len Bitopek Show right here on TNT.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's get straight down to it with Duncan White. Duncan is one of the most experienced observers of climate debate and a data-based man as well. He's also highly versed in the world of transport. Duncan, thanks for joining us here on today's News Talk today.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Just first of all, what is the best way to describe you, in a polite way, in terms of your interest in climate? Where does your interest come from?
Yeah, interesting. Having spent an entire lifetime in the health and social care sector, upon retirement, I decided that I needed to look at some other stuff. And I got involved in a conversation about climate change and the science behind it. And coming from a clinical background where you are intentionally looking at the rationality of issues, you have to sort out what is rational from what is a belief or a thought, wish fulfillment. And that conversation led me to think that what I was being told and what I was hearing was just not rational. It just did not make sense. So I went away and started studying it, and notes that I made of my readings and studyings turned into a book, which turned into a thesis, which turned into a research program. So here I am 5 years later, steeped in it and learning every day, not from a scientific background in terms of sort of geology or mechanics or anything like that. But nevertheless, with a bit of intelligence, you can thresh your way through the science and determine what is fact and what is not fact. And one comes to a conclusion very, very quickly that what we're being told by the mainstream media, by politicians, the political system, is frankly nonsense. So you have to then start thinking afresh about, well, how can we approach this problem? How can we deal with this problem? And then films like the movie that you quoted a few minutes ago come along, which very neatly places the whole parameter of the science of climatology in perspective. Marvellous piece of documentary filmmaking.
So that's where I come from. I want to get a very erudite explanation of your position. I want to go into that again in a little bit more detail in the next few minutes. And I want to go into the depth of the film just after the first break in about 5 minutes. I just want to now dwell on the big picture here. You don't set yourself up as the world's greatest qualified climate guru, but you do say that you approach this from a data-based position. I'll express an opinion here. A lot of the time when I talk to climate fanatics, to catastrophists, to warmists, by which I mean people who claim that we're on the brink of a tipping point to get runaway climate change, they don't seem to be interested in climate at all. There's one gentleman who's retired now. He's a Green Party councillor in England. And he makes a proud point of saying, I'm not going to look at the data. I'm not a climatologist. Why do these people wear as a badge of honour the idea of ignorance?
Well, this brings me on to the three elements that I've been studying around climate change. And this is an absolute key example of the Dunning-Kruger effect and what I have come to call the midwifery. And you have and I can go into that, I can bore you to death with this stuff, you know, if you want. We come across sort of what we call a resistance to learning. We have this midwit effect of people who think they know enough to make a pronouncement, to make a political statement, to base a political program or manifesto on this limited amount of knowledge that they think they have. And you know, it really is unconscious incompetence and a resistance to learning, which is a characteristic of the Dunning-Kruger syndrome, where people think they know a lot more than they do and are willing to go out and persuade other people that their limited knowledge has traction and is relevant, whereas in actual fact, they are just basically stupid. I can come back to the sort of the three issues that came out of the film that you mentioned for me when we viewed it the other night.
Yes, let's go into that in a short while. I just want to just dwell on this, because what you're basically saying is people get just enough to think they can pronounce on it, but don't want any more. This is my opinion, Duncan, and it is an opinion, not a fact. Well, not a fact I can prove. It seems to me they want to treat it as a quasi-religion, where they start shaking their head as soon as you start asking them questions about what proportion of the atmosphere is CO2 and so on. We'll go into all of that. Fascinating and really very accessible science, if you to do it like the movie does. But they start shaking their head and say, look, we all know there's a climate emergency, and people like you are in the pockets of big oil, or they make some ad hominem personal attack against you. It feels to me like a religion. Sorry, Duncan, go ahead.
No, you know, the idea that we who sign up to the rational science, the logical science and the real science are always accused of being in the pocket of big oil. I just wish I had some of their money. Just buy. Could I go to town with that? You know.
No, you're right. But having said that, the counterpoint to this is that there's big money in the environmental side too. Trillions. And it does appear to me that you've got those with a vested interest, and we'll talk about motivation in the third part of my discussion with you. But these individuals tend to want to shut you down, or they say you should be cancelled. That's something they say. Oh, you should be cancelled. You're dangerous. And then you've got them saying ludicrous things like it should be a crime against humanity to cause a climate emergency. Why do we get the hyperbole? Is it because they simply aren't willing to engage with the science?
Well, it's a whole ladder of step processes that gets you to that point. And the ultimate sort of manifestation of what you've just outlined is the Canadian C-63 law, where they are talking about compulsory house arrest for life for expressing opinions that are contrary to the political narrative. So Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, wants to introduce this law, wants to get it passed. So that if you, like you or I, voiced an opinion that was contrary to the political narrative, we would spend the rest of our natural days in under house arrest, presumably until we were re-educated and released into the mass of society. But they do not want us spreading the poison of contrary opinions, even though that contrary opinion is based on rational science and is supported by a whole battery of global scientists that we witnessed in the movie, who, and one of them said that the current climate narrative, the current claims for the climate change, is a crock of crap, quote, unquote. And, you know, when you have global authorities, scientific authorities of that magnitude, saying statements like that, someone somewhere ought to sit up and take notice, you know, and that's a message to you, Rishi Sunak, if you're listening, because clearly they've got it wrong.
I'm stunned by what you've just said. I haven't heard of this before, and I won't have time to check it up while we're on air. This rule, C-63 or whatever it's called, could mean you'd be under house arrest for the rest of your life if you go against the political narrative of Canada. Is that your interpretation, or is that actually what it says?
Is actually what it is.
What's the motivation for this? What's their justification?
Well, this is opening up a whole new conversation, of course. Yeah. Always follow the money. The byword is always follow the money. So, you know, if you have an entire socio-political, legal, industrial complex that is entirely integrated into a given narrative, if you start to disrupt that narrative, you are upsetting what they would claim is the natural order of things. And that means that people are going to start losing money, industry is start going to lose contracts, funds, money, profits. And the political system is so integrated into this that if you dare to try and upset that smooth path to nirvana that Trudeau in Canada and to an extent Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand in her heyday, and Albanese in Australia, and to an extent, you know, Theresa May in the United Kingdom. If you upset that pathway to nirvana, then you are threatening livelihoods, industrial well-being and commerce, trade, and the banking sector. And this leads us into another conversation, really, Lambert, because we're now talking in terms of groupthink, cults, ideological war, nudge psychological operations against the population, and that is just an entire conversation of its own, which I'm quite happy to engage with.
I'm just looking down at my screen, and it says that the Bill C-63 is an act to enact the Online Harms Act to amend the Criminal Code, the Canadian Human Rights Act, and an act respecting the mandatory reporting of internet child pornography. There's quite a lot in this. And you're saying one part of this actually makes it possible to put a human being in Canada under house arrest for the rest of their lives if they don't go with the program.
That is how the mechanisms within that legal framework could pan out. And judges within that legal framework will be given the option to sentence people. And if they think that someone is expressing views which could damage society, could create disenfranchisement, could create counter-narrative, there is the capacity to put someone in house arrest for the rest of their life.
Hold that thought. I will come back to that. And I think I'll probably get you on to explain this, because Canada's not far away politically from the UK. And if what you're saying is true, we are so, so close to the kind of thing written about by, obviously, the late George Orwell, but also...
But you also have to look at the Irish. You have to look at the Irish legal framework that has been trying to introduce in the last few months, as well as the UK's Online Harms Bill. They're all, to use a George Galloway phrase, they're both cheeks of the same ass.
Thank you for using two words which I don't normally use myself. I don't think they're outside the law, but I know you feel very strongly about this. After the break, I want to get, this is fascinating, and this is definitely worthy of an hour in itself, and I'll do so in the next few weeks, potentially with you, Duncan, because you know so much about this. After the break, I want to go into the launch of a film which has had zero mainstream media coverage, even though it absolutely undermines the claims that human beings are wrecking the planet. Whether you are pro or anti the climate emergency, don't go anywhere, because what you're going to hear means that one side is unquestionably righter than the other. That's all here on the Lembitopic Show on today's news talks. See you in a minute.
TNT's Hervé Morich.
Being reported today, Canada's financial intelligence unit has shut some of its systems down as it manages what it calls a cyber instance. So again, we've been warned many times over about CyberPolygon and something like this happening at a greater scale before or during 2025. That's what has been simulated. Whether it happens or not is an entirely different story, but more often than not, when they simulate, pandemics, war scenarios, they do come to pass.
Hrvoje Morich on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. A hoax about carbon dioxide in the climate has caused a global energy and economic disaster. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Okay. Welcome back to the Lembotopic Show here on today's News Talk TNT. I'm talking with Duncan White, who knows more than most about the science of climate change, which means he knows more than just about anyone on the climate emergency side. I've just been looking at the bombshell you dropped there a moment ago on the show, Duncan, about the C63 Act. And let me quote what it says, and then we'll get into the subject that we're meant to be discussing. It says preventative measures could include banning the person from being near a synagogue or a mosque, or restrictions on internet use. And the quote is, that would help to de-radicalize people who are learning things online and acting out in the real world violently, sometimes fatally. It seems to me, and ironically, the C63 Act you've been talking about in Canada is introduced by liberals. By liberals, people who are meant to support free speech and debate to resolve issues. It seems to me from what you said that the excuse for putting somebody under lifelong house arrest would be if you think they're going to commit hate crimes. And I suppose that could be interpreted in any way. Hate of the environment, hate of the public by wrecking our climate. Is that how it works?
That is one way of looking at it, certainly. I think, you know, one always has to balance intention against actuality. And what a politician intends and what actually comes out can often be two different things. One of the key sort of issues about this legislation and other legislative efforts around the world, particularly Ireland, is that it essentially attempts to define pre-crime. So a crime before it happens, the intention of a crime, the potential, the capacity to commit a crime. So you get into the world of pre-crime. And there was a film about this. Well, I can't remember the title of it, but it got the Tom
Minority
Cruise
Report.
In
it. Minority Report.
Yeah, where they had the three precogs in a pool of water. You know, I can't remember it precisely. And their role was to determine who was going to commit a crime before the crime was committed, because that person had the capacity, the equipment, whatever, and the mental and emotional capacity to perpetrate that crime. So this set of legislative measures are in the Anglosphere is really about its default position is it's determining pre-crime. And if you, for example, have, and they flower it up with things like, you know, it's preventing radicalization, it's preventing paedophilia, it's preventing X, Y, and Z. But if the political system determines that an adverse comment about climate change, gender identity, whatever, is such that it renders you harmful to society, clunk, click.
We need to come back to this on another occasion. I'm just stunned by it. And while you're talking, I'm looking at a news report. I'll just make one more comment here. A quote from Joss DeHaas, who's a lawyer with the Canadian Constitution Foundation. Even if the complaints don't go anywhere, they'll be able to be threatened. If you don't take that tweet down, or if you don't stop that comedy routine, I'm going to take you to the Human Rights Tribunal. That does seem tremendously dark and dangerous. Trudeau, in my view, has done incalculable damage to Canada, actually. But let's go into that on another occasion. An interesting and not totally irrelevant digression, because it does play into the hands of the Green Movement, who seem incapable of winning on the science. Now, let's talk about the film, which I guess could be banned under this new rule itself.
Absolutely. Because
this new film, Climate the Movie. First of all, tell us about this film, Climate the Movie. I know the producer was Tom Nelson, who's a very highly regarded podcaster on the subject of climate, highly regarded by those who don't think there's a climate emergency, I should say. But you saw the film, you saw the world premiere. Tell us about the film.
Right. On its sort of most simple level, it was an extraordinarily professional production that took the claims of climate change, anthropological climate change, that is, and deconstructed them in a very precise, very rational, very focused way. So from a visual perspective, as an audience member, it was wonderful. It was engaging. It was wonderful. But there were three things that came out of it for me, three important things on different levels. The first is the science. And it did deconstruct the case for anthropological climate change in a very clever, very structured way that rolled out issue by issue by issue. And it had world-class scientists, some of whom we've met, deconstructing the deconstruction. So that was brilliant. And having learned a bit as much as I can over the last several years about climate change, what they were saying was absolutely on the nail. And one of the scientists in that film, Matthew Wiliacki, I've been in correspondence with him prior to and subsequent to that film, and he does a weekly newsletter, and it's well worth getting it. The second element, or the other two elements that for me that were critical in terms of watching that film, in terms of the output from that film, was that it revealed the absolute stupidity, and it revealed the, and I don't know whether I'm allowed to say this online, bullshit. Let's call it humbug.
No, I'd rather you didn't use language like that, because some children are listening as well. So I understand the point. You said it. You haven't broken the rules. It's just I think about my six-year-old. That's the only reason. But okay, you made it now, but carry on.
Okay. So the two elements that came out were, for me, apart from the science, was that it revealed in graphic detail the stupidity that has been generated around claims of climate change. And, you know, it showed that there is a hierarchy of stupidity. There's institutional stupidity as well as individual stupidity. But it also sort of brought out the political ineptitude that we mentioned a few minutes ago in this discussion in terms of the unconscious incompetence and the resistance to learning. And people in the political dimension just simply refuse to learn. And then you look at people like Extinction Rebellion, Just Stop Oil, and you think the idiocy that goes along with those campaigns for the want of Googling a few examples of how the climate change campaign has got it wrong. It's just so simple to do. You don't need to be a rocket scientist. And then I think the third sort of element of what came out of the film for me was the bar humbug. But, you know, and we can get into sort of discussion about this in greater detail, because the topic I'm currently researching and have been doing for over a year is how political system gets away with this. And that's the study of agnotology, the deliberate manufacture of ignorance. So, you know, in the sort of bar humbug context of watching that film, we've got, you know, deliberate deceptive misrepresentation of the data, the science. It was intended to deceive. The way it's deceptive and the way it's distorted is a willful intention to deceive the public. And it's full of deliberate falsehoods. There's a continuum of deceptions that stack up on top of each other. And, you know, this is a carefully wrought deception. It's not something that just, oh, gosh, popped out all of a sudden. It's a carefully staged, programmatic network of carefully wrought deceptions. It's an intricate network of deception around how humanity is supposed to have created climate change. And you can pick away at little bits of it. But at some point, you've got to stand back and you've got to see the big picture and you've got to unbundle it. And that's where we get to with things like groupthink, cults, and you mentioned earlier about it has a religious fervor. And that film brought out that so much of the beliefs that the people who subscribe to the anthropogenic climate change narrative are full of, it's all about belief. It's not about rational science. It's not about thinking it through. It's not about deciphering the evidence. It's a belief system. And then you sort of see people like Extinction Rebellion in their medieval costumes and their ritualistic parades through sound centres. And you just think, you know, their brains have been stolen. Their rational thinking process has been hijacked. Their perceptual filters in terms of psychology have been interfered with. And, you know, if I'm going off on a rant here, you know, slow me down. But the film brought out for me these three key elements. And I think, you know, from a public relations and educational perspective, we've got to start addressing these elements, the stupidity and the humbug. Okay, I've ranted enough.
Yeah. No, this is fascinating. Essentially, just in terms of the science, I have myself looked at the film, and it makes it absolutely clear, using data and without overwhelming the audience with science, it makes it absolutely clear that human-generated carbon dioxide can't be wrecking the climate, because carbon dioxide itself doesn't drive climate change. Its level follows climate change. When it gets warmer, there's more CO2. When it gets colder, there's less CO2. To slightly oversimplify it, because the CO2 gets sucked into a cold ocean and released from a warm ocean. I understood that correctly, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah. And this was made abundantly clear in the film with you know, professors of global standing who are in this film saying quite unequivocally that CO2 cannot drive an elevated atmospheric temperature. It is just physically impossible for it to do that. It's the heating of the oceans that releases more CO2. So something is heating the oceans. Oh my gosh, what could that be? Maybe the sun. And you know, it's the release of CO2 from the gigatons of CO2 that are dissolved in the oceans. That gets released after the oceans have been heated. So it's you know, the idea that we are releasing CO2 into the atmosphere that is magically, and you know, and fairy dust is being wafted into the atmosphere, and suddenly, oh dear, you know, we're getting warmer and hotter, is just absolute humbug. And these guys, these scientists on this film were really so precise in their identification of this process. It was really quite enthralling to see it spelled out live like that.
I just want to check, for the avoidance of doubt, is there any scenario in which you think it could be shown that carbon dioxide drives significant climate change? Can you see any way in which the data could be interpreted that would back that up?
That's an interesting one. There is very marginal suggestion that some level of CO2 output has an atmospheric effect. But to answer your question directly, there is no obvious or detectable or discernible scientific process that says that CO2 in the atmosphere is the causative factor in climate change. It is not. It simply is not. It is a consequence, not a cause.
CO2 has been, according to that film, orders of magnitude higher than it is now. And with the denser atmospheres we had in the past, I don't want to get too technical about this, it's been 20 times, 100 times higher than it is now. And we didn't get runaway greenhouse effects.
Yeah. And adding to that is the concept that we are in an extinction event. And you have people like Guterres at the United Nations, the Secretary General, saying that the planet is boiling. Rag nonsense. And you have people saying, you know, in parliamentary terms, saying that we are in an extinction event and that we have to do catastrophic measures to avert that disaster. And it just does not stack up. There is just no scientific foundation for these claims. And again, in that film, it was refreshing to see not just the written word, but the spoken word of scientists of global repute refuting these nonsensical claims. I said when we came out from watching that film that it ought to be compulsory viewing for MPs, town councillors, United Nations apparatchiks, and so on and so forth, because it is a Western luxury belief. You know, we have this westernized luxurious belief that we are creating global climate change. The Chinese, the Indians, they don't believe this. They're not interested in this. The Argentinians, the Brazilians, load of hokum. Yet, you know, we have the Anglosphere, the English-speaking world, queuing up to wreck their societies through media issues like net zero and things like that.
Essentially, you've described what's called the BRICS countries there, a collection of countries that collectively represent more than half of the population of the planet and which haven't got the slightest intention of stopping their CO2 emissions. None at all.
And I can't remember the precise figures, which I read only a matter of days ago, was that China is building, I think it was something quite extraordinary, like 6 coal-fired power stations a week or something.
No, I think you're exaggerating. It's only 2. It's only 100 a year. hold that thought. After the break, I want to read some of the comments in the tntradio.live chat. And I also then want to start looking at the politics of the situation. You're listening to Meet Lembit Oping. I'm talking to Duncan White about a seminal film which was premiered in central London, Climate the Movie, which has had almost no coverage. I did check. There's one newspaper which interviewed the director, Martin Durkin, and that's it. Everybody else, if you put in climate movies, they'll give you a list of catastrophe movies that tell you that the world's ending. And it's a curious thing. This piece of documentary broadcasting really runs the coach and horses through the claim that CO2 drives climate. Let alone human-generated CO2. We're going to look at the politics in a moment. You're listening to Lembit Oping here on today's News Talk. See you in a minute.
I was such a young age. Everything changed. My name is Chloe. When I was 13, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. When I found out, I just didn't know how to react. I felt like everything was just kind of closing in on me. It just became a routine. Dad's doing chemo. I'd come home from school, wait for mum to finish work, and we'll go straight to the hospital, spend a few hours there, just draw. It was hard to navigate going to school. Hundreds of kids, and I was the only one with a dying dad. He was diagnosed in March, and then he died in October. Towards the end, I heard about Canteen. It kind of felt nice to know that they had other people like me. They understood what I was going through, and we didn't even have to chat about cancer. In 2020, I became a youth ambassador, so I can help others the way they helped me. I've done so many things since I was 13. I've graduated high school, university, gotten my license, made a move across the country. Life now is just a whole lot more fun. Please give a gift today to support more young people like me experiencing cancer.
Might not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. But you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
You're with Len Vidopic on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Home of Free Speech, where we dig deep into the subjects making the headlines today and indeed in the week just gone. I'm still with Duncan White, and we're talking about a really very important film which was premiered in central London, in Leicester Square, in fact, Climate the Movie, which has received next to no coverage at all, even though it absolutely annihilates the claim that human beings and the CO2 we generate are destroying the climate. Let me read some of the comments. We were also talking about Justin Trudeau, the self-styled head of Canada, who many people regard as a terrible authoritarian, and some legislation which could lead to you to being under house arrest if you say things the state doesn't like. There's just a few comments here. Hemingway says, this Online Harms Act of Trudeau's also allows a provincial judge to impose house arrest and a fine if there are reasonable grounds to believe a defendant may commit an offence, which ties into my contributor Duncan's point that this is about future crime, as in the film Minority Report. Holly says it's coming here for sure. How will they implement it, though? Good question. Blodder says digital ID will be the mechanism of enforcement, plus CBDC. Thanks for that. And Craig of Fish says, if you connect all the dots, all Western countries are pulling in the Agenda 2030 direction. All the strings are being pulled by the same organizations. Holly says, then we mustn't comply. And just a couple more. Seb says, our political system is too corrupt to be saved. Sometimes something is so broken it can't be fixed. A lot of people feel like that. Mr. Moose says, and I feel the capitals really, you will comply. Well, yes, this is a problem. Many people will. If it's 100% be able to control money and therefore food, shelter, and travel. A lot. Madrid says, Lebit, great man, but still so naive. What, me? Okay. Or do you mean Trudeau? I don't think Trudeau's naive. I think he's a cynic. It goes on at many, many points there. Blodders asks, what do you think restrictions on internet use is then, Lambert? I think it's rhetorical. Well, I do agree with you. I think that there's a problem, because if you can talk to other people without filters, then the state loses control. Duncan, back to you, and then we'll go back to the environment again. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a fair response there. I think those commenters have got it about right. Yeah, I think, you know, it is a great danger. And certainly the comment about digital identity will be the lock, the key and the lock to this system is absolutely right. And I think the Chinese are proving that. Quite extraordinary measures that the Chinese political system has gone to control their society. And I think we are in danger of walking down that path.
Just two more comments, one of which directly relates to me. Just a Bloke says, we all have the capacity to shoplift. Our retailer's going to charge you for walking through their doors just in case you do. And Seb says, and this is clearly directed at me, about me, not to me, apparently I'm naive still, but Seb says, not for long. He's slowly, painfully so, opening his eyes. Won't be too long before the sleep's rubbed away, I'm hoping. Newborn eyes always cry with pain at their first look at the morning sun. Fool, if you think it's over, it's just begun. Thank you, Chris Rea. And actually, I think, was it also the Carpenters? I'm not sure. Somebody else as well. And Lou says, I like this phrase, Duncan, show me the man and I'll show you the crime. How sexist of you, Lou. Women can be criminals too. That's not going to turn into transgender. I identify as somebody who relates to our viewers' points of view, I think. Seb, also one more thing. Good man, Amir, don't compromise your standards. Why should you have to? Well, I do tend to think so. And one more from Mr. Moose. Simon, climate science equals pseudoscience. Well, not if you do it properly, I think, Duncan. There are many, many comments. I haven't got time to go through all of them. The story so far then in our dialogue, leaving the shocking state of Canada aside, if they do pass this thing, when it comes to climate science and the film Climate the Movie, it absolutely destroys any claim that carbon dioxide has anything more than a marginal effect on temperature. It probably does have a tiny amount. I'm not sure we can measure it, but it's a help, because having a slightly warmer atmosphere is better than having a colder one. But we're also in a situation where there's major censorship now. The mainstream media doesn't like to talk about it, as we see by the virtual absence of any coverage of the film. What is to be done?
Well, I think, you know, like all good movements that seek to overturn the dominant paradigm, you know, for want of a better expression, you have to go over the heads or underneath the barricades that have been erected to prevent the message getting out there. And, you know, there are various publications that come out regularly trying to expose it. There are newsletters and websites, but it hasn't really got past the barricades that the mainstream media and the political system have set up. So, you know, it's unless we sort of take things into our own hands and start using other media that gets the message across. One of the things that I think we should be looking at is a far broader amalgamation of people and groups and campaigners who are against these measures, because it's not just climate change. There's a whole load of other things as well. And, you know, bring that lot together into a coalition that can start getting the message out more forcefully. But one of the real barriers that we found is that the general public do not have the time to sit and study the science. So a film like this is critical, you know, a reasonably short, long enough film that focuses on each element of the scientific issues concerning climate change and takes apart all the false claims is absolutely essential for the wider public to get a better handle on it. Because, you know, we can talk about the science, you know, the astrophysics, the atmospheric chemistry and all that, but Joe public does not have time to sit and study and listen to that sort of stuff. You know, they've got the family, shopping, the bills to pay, the kids to do, you know. So having a focused film like that is going to be the first step in getting the message across. And I just think the bigger problem is the money. Now, the cash that goes into the climate change industry, and it is an industry, you know, you have millions and millions of dollars and pounds going into these campaigns. You know, Extinction Rebellion, for example, is not a sudden pop-up. It's not a sudden coalition of like-minded youth, young people getting together and thinking, oh my gosh, we've got a problem. This is a carefully funded, structured, well-financed enterprise aimed at targeting the most newsworthy positions that you can adopt. So it parades in its lovely, strange medieval uniforms around Trafalgar Square and wherever else.
No, those are my normal clothes, Duncan. Those are my normal clothes. Oh, you mean them?
I saw
the Labour Party in Britain dressed as chickens yesterday. I have to say, the standards of decorum in British politics are risible now, but so seems to be the thinking. You sound perfectly rational. I have never made a secret of my conclusion based on science, I like to suggest, and the study of climate since 1978. When I was 13, that's when I started taking it seriously. I was very academic when I was in my teens. My conclusion is that it can't possibly be the case that initially, by the way, when I in my teens, I thought that human beings were wrecking the climate. That's where I came into this. I thought we were creating an ice age. And the first thing I had published about it was called Man's Mark. And it was a figurative description of how human beings would cause a snowball Earth scenario. And actually, although the methodology that I described for the science was wrong, my prediction was actually proved correct in 2006, when it turned out the Earth had been, in fact, in a snowball state. So I feel fairly qualified to talk about it. But what I'm interested in is that there's been a complete inversion of truth versus fiction, because you can't have the scientific debate with these people, the ones who glue their hands to the roads, because they just call you a murderer.
Yeah. I mean, this comes back to my point that some people have an absolute inbuilt capacity to reject learning and to resist information and learning and a better understanding of things. And the cult belief, the fervour of the belief system takes over and it becomes the dominant sort of thing. So, you know, people like Extinction Rebellion and Just Stop Oil, you can trace those sorts of campaigns, those sorts of things back to, you know, religious movements throughout history, you know, but any number of sort of medieval, right through, you know, sort of early Middle Ages, right up through, you know, cult religious beliefs, you know, all the way through society. You have these small clusters of people who have these fervent religious beliefs. And this is just another manifestation of that. Okay, it's well funded, but yeah. And we have this real problem with the political system, but it does not allow people, does not allow politicians to learn and to understand, which is why I said earlier that this film ought to be compulsory viewing. There ought to be a legal requirement for politicians to watch this film because it explains in very fine detail, in very rational, easy to understand terms, why anthropogenic climate change is a load of nonsense. And until we can get through to the political class and the other elites that support them, then we are going to struggle, to be honest. We are going to struggle to get that message across. And I think the more effort that is put into making visually impactful messages like this, and I and my colleagues are working on a video at the moment, not as detailed as the film. It's going to be 6 or 7 minutes, but it explains why net zero, which is a consequence of this anthropological climate change campaign, why net zero is going to be so damaging to society, so damaging to families, so expensive, for absolutely no point. There is no point to it. It is doing nothing. It's achieving nothing, except bankrupting the country. So I think we have to get the principles across in words that the public can accept, but with the authority that these scientists in the film had.
I'm going to talk with a bit of luck, Harry Wilkinson from Net Zero Watch, who I know is very interested in the whole situation. The reason this is, that'll be tomorrow. The reason is because someone's got to actually make the public and the world aware of this film. In fact, Tom Nelson, the producer, has agreed to come on in a few weeks' time as well, because it summarizes in whatever length of time it is, probably 80 minutes. It seemed like 20 to me. It's fascinating. It summarizes everything you need to know about why the climate crisis is a fraud. But here's a question that Mogden asks. We've only got 3 minutes, but Mogden says, the problem I see with the climate film is, who are the people that would go to watch it? Which prompts the question, aren't we in our own echo chamber, even if those people who believe the science says don't panic and everything's fine, even if people say that after watching the film, the people who go to watch the film already think that?
Yeah, I mean, that is a danger. I mean, I think certainly the world premiere of it, I mean, you are going to have people that buy into this message, that accept that the rational science is reality rather than the faux science, false science that is promoted. And but you've got to start somewhere. And, you know, those people are going to be ambassadors for the message, and we need to get that out. So, you know, for example, we need to get friendly websites, friendly YouTubes, friendly websites to put this film on there. It's going to be in the public domain in a week or three. And I think we need to get copies of it. We need to put it on our website. We need to get colleagues on other websites and podcasts to promote it. And there are plenty of avenues. And you've got to start somewhere. You've got to lift the lid. Once the lid is lifted, then, you know, the poison can come out. But we have to start somewhere. We have to start somewhere.
Yeah, and I think this film does do something by way of antidote to the nonsense. Just in 15 seconds, Duncan, if you were to summarize to somebody who is a lay person the whole climate debate in 15 seconds, why should they not be worried that there's a climate crisis?
They should not be worried about the climate because there is not a crisis. That all the evidence, the real evidence, tells us quite unequivocally that there is not any monumental variations in climate patterns that the historical record is absolutely consistent with what is happening, and that if you really want to get away from the climate crisis, the anxiety and the free-floating anxiety that is around it, stop watching the BBC.
Thanks very much indeed, and do watch TNT. That is Duncan. I'll let you go back to your weekend here in the UK. I wonder what you think. Lots of commentary. I'll try and get through that after the break. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about another contradiction with Francis Frake Harris, who is an expert on the British penal system. How does not shouting at prisoners fit in with the whole question of extremism and correction? All of that with me, Lembitopic, right here on today's News Talk TNT. See you in a few minutes.